Okay, we're starting a new Mishnah. In this setup, it's the seventh Mishnah in the third Perek. The Mishnah, let's see the Mishnah first, and then we'll do the Abarbanel. And I doubt if we're going to finish more than the Abarbanel today. Rabbi Chalafta ben Dosa ish kvar Chananya Omer. Okay, Rabbi Chalafta ben Dosa, who was the Ish Kfar Chananya, simply means he lived in Kfar Chananya, but Ish means that he was one of the major personalities. He was the personality of this place. Omer Asora, Shiyoshvin Vaoskin Batorah, 10 people who sit together and learn Torah, Shchina Shruya Beinehem. So the Shchina resides amongst them. Shneamar, Elohim Nitzav Ba'adas El, that God stands in the Eda, in the congregation, in the congregation of God, God's congregation. And we'll see why a congregation is 10 people. That's, right now we won't discuss it. We'll get to it when we get to the discussion of the Mishnah. U'minayin afilu chamisha. Okay, so we have how many here? 7. So we don't have 10. So how do you know even 5 that we make?
Is it quite a mixed group?
What? Yeah, lechora, it's still right. You don't need a minion of men for this, I don't think. No.
Okay.
There are minyonim that women count towards, where you don't need a minion, even though the way the pasuk learns, we'll see, there probably only means men, but the. For instance, it says that you should have a lechatchila, a minyan of people reading Megillah, hearing Megillah being read, because pirsume nisa, because that is the way to publicize the miracle. Since over there the minyan isn't because you need a minyan, but because you need a lot of people, so women are also people. So you don't need you don't need dafka, a minyan of men. But we'll see from where we learn that this pasuk is talking about a minyan. Here it applies taka to men. U'menayin afilu chamisha. How do you know even 5 people that the shechina is with them? Shenemar v'agudoso al eretz yisoda. This is the girsa we have. We learn it from agudoso, and aguda is eretz al eretz yisoda. Aguda is, according to this, a handful of people, and a hand has 5 fingers, so it's 5 people. How do you know even 3? Shenemar bekerev Elohim yishpot. Elohim means judges, and a minimal court is 3 judges. Umenayin afilu shnayim. How do you know even 2 people? Shenemar oz nidbaru yirei Hashem isha reyehu vayakshev Hashem vayishma. God fearing people speak one to the other. She's 2. Umenayin afilu echad. How do you know even 1 person? Wherever I will mention my name, right, I'll come and bless you. So we have even 1 person. Okay, we'd have to see how these sentences pan out to this 1 person learning or 2 people learning or whatever. Okay, the Abarbanel asked a few different questions here. First of all, there's a Gemara in Brachos very similar to this Mishnah, but not exactly the same, and therefore we have to understand the differences. The Gemara in Brachos says that 10 people who get together to daven, a minyan of davening, God's presence is there. And not only that, but davening is like learning Torah. 10 people davening is like as if they'd be learning Torah. And then it goes to 3, skips the 7 and the 5, and goes to, not 7, skips the 5, right, I was the one who mentioned the 7. It goes, skips to 5, and then goes to 3. 3 is what's it called, dayanim, that God rests amongst judges, people who are judging. And then it goes to 2 and 1. And 2 is people. 2 people learning Torah is a student and a teacher. And 1, somebody learning on their own. Okay. Now, What is Rav Chalafta? He adds in a five too. And also, he's not talking about judging. He's talking judges. He's talking about all people learning Torah, just different amounts of people learning Torah. So basically, and he also asked the Abarbanel, so why is this different than over there? And secondly, this Mishnah would have much more made sense to be positioned after the Mishnahs before, where it spoke about two people sitting and there's no Torah between them, and then three people who are eating and discussing Torah, and here, 10 people, right? Why is it not after that? Another question that he asked. And basically, he says the following. He says that Rabbi Chalafta argues on what we said before. Before we said that Shnaim Shioshvim, they made him Torah, but Shnaim Shioshvim, Yeshvim Devi Torah, Shchina Shruya Beinehem. Two people, the Shchina's there. And one person, he says there, God gives him reward. But it seems that the Shchina is not there. Rabbi Chalafta argues on that. And he argues also on the Gemara in Brachos. And he says the following. He says, first of all, even one person who's learning Torah, the Shechina is with him too. That's what he argues on what came before. And secondly, he says that it's not just that judges, if you're judging a case, that's where the Shechina is, or if you're davening. But there are different gradations. The Gemara in Brachos seems to say there's no different gradations in learning Torah except for two in one. A Rebbe and a Talmud and one person. And Rabbi Chalafta says, no, there are different gradations of how much Shechina comes. 10 people learning Torah, 5 people learning Torah, 3 people learning Torah, 2 and 1. Okay, the Gemara in Brachos is not talking about people learning Torah necessarily. It's talking about people davening. And that's one way of having a connection to God. That's what it means, the Shechina is amongst them. You have that connection to God. And 3 people judging, that's another way. And 2 people learning, there also you have that connection. And 1 person, at least God gives you, reward. So Rabbi Chalafta says it's not just judges and davening, but there is a difference also in effect, in intensity, of how much the connection is between the person and God, whether there's 10 people learning together, 5 people, 3 people, 2 people, 1 person. Okay, we'll discuss that, how it works. Now, this idea of Shechina Shruya Beinehem, that the Shechina resides amongst them, the basic idea is the following. What does it mean the Shechina is here? Right? We're learning Torah and the Shechina is here. God's everywhere. So what does that mean? The Shechina is with him? God is everywhere. But there are different places where it's easier to feel God's presence. The place is more conducive to feeling God's presence. For instance, the neshama and in the body is like God in filling up the universe. So there are places where the neshama is more evident. Even though the neshama is in your little toe, but you don't really sense the neshama except speech, the head, the heart. Soto in the world, there are places that are more conducive to feeling God's presence. The Beis HaMikdash is a place like that. Yerushalayim is a place like that. Eretz Yisrael is a place like that, in different gradations. So too, the Shechina is everywhere. But to feel its presence, there are certain things that can give a person a feeling of God's presence. Okay, it's from the side of the person where you feel it more, not where it exists more. Because God is equally everywhere. In fact, not he's everywhere. He is everywhere. He is everything. So therefore, God is called Makom, the place, because he doesn't exist within the world. The world exists within him. He's the place of the world, right? So God's everywhere. But where you can feel his presence changes. And therefore, there are places in the world which are more conducive to feel God's presence. Some of the Mepharshim explain it as like fertile places. You can plant a seed anywhere, but it grows better in areas that are fertile. So there are certain areas in this world that are fertile for a person feeling God's presence. So it's more on the how a person is affected, not so much where God's presence is, but where you can relate to it, and feel that connection to God. And that what it means that the Shechina is there means that you feel God's presence and feel a connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Shechina is the feeling of being close to God. So there are things that a person can do to feel the Shechina. There are places in the world where it's conducive, like we said, and there's also things that you can do that make God's presence more evident to you. One of them is learning Torah. So any individual who learns Torah is connecting himself to God and feels God's presence. In fact, some say that that's what it means, Eino Dome, Shona Pirko Mea Pa'amim, L'Shona Pirko Mea Pa'amim Ve'echad. Says there's no comparison to a person who learns something 100 times and a person who learns it 101 times. That extra time is completely different than just one more time. That's a simple meaning. But some say what it means is the following. A person can learn something 100 times, but it's no comparison if he learns it 100 times plus one, not 101 times. But he's learning it 100 times plus one with God. God's his chavrusa. He feels that presence of God with, then the 100 times and with God. That's a different story. Plus one. So learning Torah itself, Torah is God's mind. It's God's will. Okay? Beyond that, the Torah is combinations of God's name. It's come to us as the words that we see and the sentences and whatever. But originally the Torah existed before the world was created. And the Ramban, and it was black fire on white fire, whatever that means. But the Ramban explains it can't mean that the Torah was existed the way we know it before the world was created, because then there'd be no free choice. Paro would have said what he had to say, and it was all the script was written before. So there can't be that the script was written before in the way we know it. The Torah was different names of God. Names of God means God's attributes. So the world was created from the Torah. All these different attributes of God, right, are what is created in the world. Everything represents a different aspect of God. How it pans out depends on how history developed. So it became, those names were jumbled. They were unjumbled by how things progressed in the world. And that's the way we have the Torah, with the words we have and the sentences and the narrative or whatever. But the original way the Torah was before the world was created was a jumble of God's names that represented God's attributes, that God created things. And each thing represents a different attribute of God. So the Torah is the names of God. So Mamela, when you're learning Torah, basically you're connecting yourself to God. You're learning his will, his mind, and you're connecting to his attributes, to his name. So therefore, the Torah and the world also mesh together. Okay? because the Torah was the blueprint of the world. So when God had the plan of what the world is, the plan was manifested in the world. So the world is the physical manifestation of the Torah. So there's a connection between the world and the Torah. The we'll get to the I think the next Mishnah, and we'll speak about this more, this idea of the connection between the world and the Torah. But in any case, so a person can feel God's presence either by learning Torah or by observing nature too. Because observing nature, the Rambam says, how do you get close to God and feel love for God, tremendous affection to God, and a tremendous awe? In one place he says, by studying nature and seeing the greatness of God's creation, you begin to have a great desire to know God. That's love. And you have a great awe of standing in awe of what God created. In another place, the Rambam says that the way to come to fear and love of God is by learning Torah. That basically they're the same. The Torah is the theoretical, and the world is the manifestation of that theory. The spiritual, and this is the physical. Okay, in any case, so therefore, Rabbi Chalafta says the following, that it's not just God's presence is by judges and by davening, but learning Torah itself is a connection to God. And it makes a difference how many people there are together learning. If you have a minion of people learning Torah, then the connection to God is stronger. How do you know that there's even a connection with five? Not the same connection, right? A lesser intense connection, but it's still there. We have a pasuk. How do you know that even three, meaning it's not the same connection as five, but it still is there? And how do you know even two? Same idea. And how do you know even one? And it's not just that one person learning Torah, God gives him reward. There's a connection between that one person and God also. It's not the same intensity of 10 people learning together, or even five, or even three, or even two. But it's there. It exists. And in that, he argues on what we said before. Before it said one person who learns Torah, God gives him reward. But it's not that there's a connection there. That feeling of God's presence is not there necessarily with one person. And Rav Chalafta says no. It even exists by one. And there are different gradations of how much God's presence is felt, whether there's one, two, three, five, and ten. And the Gemara is just telling me that there are other manifestations of God's presence, like davening with a minion, judging a Torah case, and learning Torah. But it only mentions two differences in learning Torah, two and one. And there is no difference between anything beyond two. But Rav Chalafta says, no, there's a difference of 10. But however, after 10, it's all equal. If you have a million people learning Torah and 10 people learning Torah, it's equal. Just like a million of people davening, you have the same davening, whether it's 10 or it's a million. When you have 10 people eating together, the same benching is for 10 as for a million. There's no difference. We'll discuss why in a few seconds. In any case, so that is Rav Chalafta and why he's different than what came before.
Rav Lev.
Yeah.
So you should feel Hashem's presence then more when you're with more people learning. But I feel it more when I'm alone or when I'm with one person learning. When I'm with a whole crowd, I'm not so aware.
Yeah, I hear. Okay, it could be that. There's two kinds of a connection. One is the intrinsic connection that your neshama has, and the other one is your experiential connection, what you experience. So it could be you experience a connection more, but it could be that the essential intrinsic connection is greater when there's 10. Okay. So now why isn't this Mishnah immediately after the Mishnayos of two people sitting and discussing Torah or not, and the next Mishnah, three people eating together and discussing Torah or not, right? He says because the Mishnayos that we learned after that, okay, these two Mishnayos follow the first one. The first ones we said, what's the connection? That the first Mishnah said you can philosophically keep yourself from sin by pondering and contemplating where you came from, where you're going, and where you're going to have to give an accounting for everything you did. And Rabbi Chanina, Shkana Kohanim, said there's another way to avoid sin, by having fear of the government. And Rabbi Chanina ben Tradian said, no, philosophy is not going to keep you from sin, and fear of the government is not going to keep you from sin. What's going to keep you from sin is learning Torah. And then he said that learning Torah, however, can be by two people just discussing Torah, right, in a spiritual way, or it can be done in a physical way by people eating, what's it called, or in other ways also, like a person who's up at night, or and have ideal times when a person can contemplate Torah, right, and be mekabel all Torah also. So all of these Mishnayos follow each other. Once we finish this set of Mishnayos that discuss this issue, how do you protect yourself from sin? Philosophically, fear of the government, or learning Torah, and in many different ways, learning Torah just talking, learning Torah by eating, learning Torah when you're, what's it called, traveling, and in ideal situations, and the ultimate accepting upon yourself the yoke of Torah, that's all one set. Once we finish that, now we go to Rabbi Chalafta, who says, I argue on something that was said before, before it was said, that even one person who's learning Torah, God gives him reward. I'm telling you, no, even one person, God's presence is there. It's not the same presence as two people, or five people, or 10 people. That's what Rav Chalafta is adding something new to what the Gemara says in Brachos, because the Gemara in Brachos is not talking about different people learning Torah, it's different people doing different functions. People davening, people judging, and people learning Torah, right? And Rav Chalafta says, you seem to imply that just learning Torah, there's no difference between one or two people learning Torah or any more. I'm telling you, no. There's a difference if three people are learning, if five people are learning, or if 10 people are learning. Yeah.
So didn't the Gemara come after the Mishnah? So it would be the
right, but the Gemara over there, I think, is quoting a Braisa, which is... Okay, I think. I don't. Okay. Okay, so now, what are the different gradations? So the Abarbanel himself says something about the numbers 10, 5, 3, 2, and 1. And I'm going to add a little bit to what he says, and we'll discuss these numbers. The number 10 is a number that represents a complete set, perfection. Okay? Where do we find this, what's it called, the number 10? In, he says, what's it called? We have the world was created with 10, 10 mamoros, okay? There are also 10 spheros, 10 different spheres that God created that are similar to his attributes. Okay, Chochma, Bina, Das, and then there's Malchus, what's it called, Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, and Malchus. Okay, and then there are 10 different kinds of angels, the Abarbanel brings down. 10 is a tzibur. How do we know that? Because the Torah says in Eda, a congregation is 10. Because the Torah calls the minimum that we find that the Torah calls a group of people, an Eda, is 10 people.
In Sodom.
Right. By what's it called? By the Meraglim. Ad Mosai ho Eda haro hazeh. Bad Eda. Now, there were 12 spies. Kalev and Yoshua were not part of the bad Eda, so that leaves 10. It's interesting that the place we learn a minion from is from Rishoyim, from wicked people, right? But it means that 10 Jews, even wicked Jews, make up that Eda. Their neshamas are still neshamas of Jews. And that once you have a 10, that is no difference anymore after that to a million. Because the 10 represents the concept of 10. Let's just mention some of the other things. There was a call that 10 things that were created Erev Shabbos Bein HaShemoshos. There are 10 generations between Adam and Noach and 10 generations between Noach and Avram. There were 10 Nisyonos that Avram Avinu was tested with. There were 10 miracles that happened in Mitzrayim, 10 plagues, right? And the Jews were saved from them. And another 10 by Yamsuf, according to one opinion. There were 10 miracles that happened every day in the Beis HaMikdash. A person has 10 senses, 5 external and 5 internal. There's Aseret Yemei Tshuva, 10 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And there's a minion makes up that you can now daven with a minion and say things that you can't say, what's it called, without that. And being Mekadish Hashem, Kedushas Hashem is Besoch B'nei Yisrael, Besoch and Eda is 10. So all those things are, what's it called, are 10. What?
Aseret HaDibrot?
Aseret HaDibrot, right. Why don't we skip that? They're here somewhere, okay. So what is this special idea of 10? So basically 10 is a collective unity, which means the following. We have a decimal system. The Torah has a decimal system. One is the ultimate oneness of God, where everything is there's only one, nothing else. That's God. Echad mi yodea, echad elokeinu b'shamayim v'aretz, in heaven and earth, one God. That's total unity. 10 is, from the number 1 till the number 9, is separate things. Everything is a number to itself. Once you get to 10, now you unite all those numbers into a unity, a collective unity. And everything now unites again into one 10. 10 becomes a unity, and in Arabic numerals, that's what it is. It's 1 10 and 0 ones. So you have back to the 1, except now it's a 1 of many things. So it represents the goal, I think, of creation. God was one when he started creating the world. Nothing else. Then he created many things. The goal of all of that is to unite everything that was created under God and make the whole universe again united under God. That's 10. In Hebrew also, once you get to Asara, the next number is not a new number. It's Achadisrei. You build on the 10. The 10 remains a unit to itself. So 10 represents a complete set. So when God created the world with 10 mamaros, it means that there's a connection between them. This is a complete set of the complete of the world, and that they are supposed to be united. They all unite under God. And the same thing goes with the 10 spheros. The emanations that emanate from God are a complete set of attributes, and they're all united under God. They're not separate things. They're a united unit. Malachim are God's shluchim. They are agents, but they all emanate from the oneness of God. So there's 10 different kinds of malachim, but they're a complete set. God created these malachim, each one to serve a different purpose, but all together they represent the oneness of God and achieve every purpose that was supposed to be. So it's a complete set. 10 mamoros, the world was created. The Aseres Hadibros, same thing. Aseres Hadibros means that this is what unifies everything in the world. These 10 things are basically the shows the unity of Torah. Let me explain what that means. First of all, it's interesting when it comes to the utterances with which God created the world, we refer to them as Asara Mamoros, 10 utterances. Yet when we refer to the 10 commandments, we say Aseres Hadibros, not Asara Dibros, but Aseres Hadibros. Rashi explains, whenever the Torah says a number, Shiva, it means 7 separate things. When it says Shivas, it means a unit of 7. Right, for instance, Shivas Hayomim by Pesach. It's not 7 separate days. It's a unit of 7 days that make up one holiday called Pesach. So it's Shivas Hayomim. So, therefore, when it comes to the mamoros of the world, it's hard to see the unity. You see things, everything separate. So when it comes to nature, right, it's hard to see the unity amongst them. You see separate things. The Torah, on the other hand, puts it all into perspective and unites it all together, takes the world and gives it purpose and gives what's right and what's wrong and how to use it properly. And now you have something that unites everything together. So the Torah is Aseres Hadibros and the world is only Asara Mamoros. Mm-hmm. But they're all 10, except in the world, it's not as evident as it is in the Torah. Beyond that, there's another idea. And that is that since the Torah is God's mind and God's will, okay, so the Torah is really one. God doesn't have a lot of wills and a lot of, right? It's one. So that's why when the Torah was given, it says that God gave it in a miraculous way, that he said all of the 10 commandments in 1 second. But we couldn't hear it. You can't hear 10 things at the same time. And we could never reproduce that and say 10 things at the same exact time. So it's not something that a human mouth could say or a human ear could hear. And then he repeated them one by one. Now the question is, God doesn't do miracles for nothing. Why did he do it like that? Right? One shows, I can do what you can't do. You can't say 10 things at one time. I can. No, what's the purpose? Purpose is like this. No one should ever think the Torah is just a combination of many, many different things.
Collection.
Right? Collection of do's and don'ts. Right? It's a rule book. Do this, don't do that. And there are people who relate to the Torah like that. They don't see that it's one unified set of godly connection to God, which is all one. They see it as separate things. So therefore, they don't see that the Torah has to create a lifestyle, personality, value, standards, all one. They see it as separate things. And therefore, they don't create a lifestyle from it, or values, or standards. Their values, standards, lifestyle may be like the rest of the world, except they want to keep kosher and do what's right, which is fine. I mean, they'll get rewarded for it, not minimizing it, but that's not the goal. The goal is not just to keep a bunch of rules. It's to see from those rules that there's one unifying factor from all of them that reveal God's will for a person's entire life. I always like to compare it. We've mentioned this recently. You have a gigantic, what's it called, light bulb that's too big and too bright to look at. So you enclose it in a globe, and you cut in the globe 613 little windows. Through each little window, you can see a portion of the globe, of the light bulb. There's only one light bulb. How do you know what the whole light bulb looks like? If you look through all 613 windows consecutively, you'll get a composite picture of the light bulb. That's mitzvahs. Mitzvahs are not just a bunch of separate things to do. They are windows to God's will. And each mitzvah is supposed to teach me another aspect of God's will that applies to my whole life, my whole standards and values and lifestyle and so on. So therefore, there's doing the mitzvah and listening to God, and there's also listening into the mitzvah. What am I supposed to learn to apply to my whole life from these mitzvahs? And therefore, in order that people shouldn't think that the Torah is just a collection of a bunch of disjointed things to do. So God gave the entire Torah in 1 second. It's all one, but you can't function. You can't. It's like the light bulb. You can't look at it. It's too big, too bright. So then he gave it over in 10. 10, we said also, is one, but it's a collection that makes one. So now God said, now I'm giving it to you in a way, the entire, the Rav Sadia Gaon says, all 613 mitzvahs are somehow hinted to in the Ten Commandments. So the ten unites it all into ten. God first gave it one. That's what it really is. But you can't relate to it like that. So now I'll give it to you in ten. But it's hard for you to see the details in that ten. Then I'll give it to you each one separate detail, but never think they're just separate disjointed things. They're all part of a collection, of a complete set. You can understand that as 10, and it really emanates from 1. So it says everything is hinted to in those 10 commandments, and not only that, the entire 10 commandments are hinted to in the first letter, Anochi, of the word Anochi. And everything is hinted to in the Aleph, and in the little space, that little dot on the Aleph, that's everything. So it's all really one, except we, in order to relate to it, have to see it broken up into its parts. But God broke it up in such a way that we can see that it still retains a unity, a oneness. So that is the idea of 10, and therefore 10 represents a unity of many things. It doesn't make a difference how many things there are. Once you reach 10, anything beyond that is the same thing. Because it's all a unity of many, many things. And once you're talking about unity, it doesn't make a difference how many things go into that unity. So 10, and anything above 10, is similar. So that is the significance of the number 10. So 10 people learning Torah. Right, and like we said, Torah itself is a unity. And 10 people now create a unity of people learning Torah. So, and God is the ultimate unity. So that creates a very strong connection to God. Because you're doing something that connects you to God because it's God's mind and God's attributes, the Torah. And you're doing it in such a way that everybody who's learning is now united into one unity under God. So that creates the strongest connection to God. The Shekhinah is there, what's it called, in the most effective way, that if a person can be sensitive to it, he can really feel that connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam with a minyan. And that's why with a minyan, you can sanctify God's name because you're more like God. You can speak about God who's one, because you have that feeling of oneness, because you're a minion. But since we learn it from the pasuk of the Meraglim, and the Meraglim were all men who were over bar mitzvah, so it has to be men over bar mitzvah that create that unity, because that's where we learn it from. But in things where we're not looking for that unity, but we're looking for a lot of people, right, that can spread the word, like by the Megillah, there women count also towards that minyan. Because there we're not interested in the concept of a minyan of people, what's it called, who can create that unity, which we learn from the Meraglim. We're looking just for bodies that can, what's it called, that can spread the word of what's being done. Pirsumei Nisa. So that is the idea of and that's why what's it called? Yom Kippur is on the
it's not on the 10th day.
The 10th, what's it called, of the month. And the Olam Haba was created with a Yud, and this world was created with a Hey, and Ish ve'Isha, Shechina Shruya b'neihem. You have the Isha has the Hey, the five, which we'll get to what five is when we get what's it called the next week or the next time we learn, and the Yud is the man. He has that unity, right, of unifying the world. And the woman has that mila of the hey, which is more this world. Yud is more the next world, where everything will be unified. The woman has the ability of putting things together in this world to grow towards that unity. When we speak about five, which is the next thing we'll speak about this idea of men with ten and women with the five. And also what the mila of five is, we find it in many, many different places, that five is a special number also. Okay, let me move this.